Is yours here?
No.
I just do.
Yeah, that's fine.
Kirk, just try F5.
Just try F5 right now. F5's not doing it. I'll let you monkey with it for a second.
Okay.
If you got to.
Sure.
I'll give the introduction. Abigail Ottenberg, and she's currently research coordinator in the Program for Professionalism and Bioethics at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And she obtained her master's degree from St. Louis University, and she has published on the challenges of influenza in healthcare settings, ethical rationale for mandatory seasonal influenza vaccination, and its implications for future pandemics. And her current discussion and her current presentation is on mandatory health care employee vaccination, a public health initiative. And that.
I think is it the left to move
The left is forward and the right is back.
Okay, great. I'm here to convince you in the next 10 minutes that the status quo for healthcare worker influenza vaccination is no longer sustainable. I know what you're thinking, I'm pretty ambitious. So let me go ahead and get started here. I have nothing to disclose other than that the opinions represented in this presentation are of our research team and not necessarily of the Mayo Clinic. Before I begin though, I'd like to start with a story. This is the story of Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones is a good doctor. He takes pride in the way he cares for his patients. It's the start of the influenza season, and Dr. Jones receives an email about the employee vaccination clinic. I'll be there, he thinks. In the weeks following, Dr. Jones receives multiple reminders, but despite his best efforts, somehow he misses the clinic and goes unvaccinated. Now Dr. Jones isn't feeling so well, but he goes to work anyway. After all, his patients do need him. Now the nurses at work are calling in sick. Influenza appears to be spreading throughout the hospital. No one thinks much of this until a patient dies. In healthcare, every need is urgent, and so it's not difficult to understand how Dr. Jones or 7 million other healthcare workers each year go unvaccinated. Let me be clear, these are good healthcare workers. It's just that healthcare worker influenza vaccine mandates can help them be better. So here's a look at our presentation outline for today. We'll look at the scientific evidence, explore some ethical arguments and the legal framework, address a few objections, view a case study of a mandate in action, and finish with recommendations. A note before I begin, I'll refer to healthcare worker influenza vaccination mandates as mandate for the remainder of the talk. So here's a typical influenza scenario. 57% of healthcare workers go unvaccinated each year. This leads to nosocomial outbreaks, absenteeism, and presenteeism, or healthcare workers reporting to work ill. The flu is also costly, I must mention. In 1993, a report published by Serwant and Miller estimated that each episode of influenza cost the U.S. about $7,500. Annually, seasonal influenza is attributed to 200,000 hospitalizations and 36,000 deaths. Seasonal influenza is, of course, one of the leading causes of death among adults. Of course, this year is different. Influenza A, H1N1, has had a dramatic and very real impact on the health of our communities. Already, 1,000 deaths have been attributed to H1N1. Compare this to about 7 deaths attributed to seasonal flu last year, and we really see the danger of this virus. Here's data from a recent PCAST report. A plausible H1N1 scenario for planning purposes shows a dramatic uptick in requests for medical attention, overburdened ICUs, and obviously constrained hospitals. Even in the best case scenario without a mandate, we will likely only have a limited workforce to respond to these increased needs. On this side, we see that there's a strong case to be made for the safety and efficacy of influenza vaccines. To dispel some common misconceptions, the influenza vaccine does not, in fact, cause influenza, nor is the vaccine associated with a high risk of categorically serious complications. These carry only about a 1 in 1 million chance. The seasonal influenza vaccine has a proven 70 to 90% rate of protection against the virus in healthy adults. And according to data published by NICL, the vaccine also leads to about 45% fewer sick days and doctor visits. For over 25 years, the CDC has recommended healthcare workers be vaccinated against seasonal influenza. Support for this policy has also been asserted by the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association. Despite this, vaccination rates remain unacceptably low, with even the most aggressive programs rarely reaching rates above 70%. It's not until mandates are implemented that healthcare organizations are able to achieve successful rates at 95% and above. Some of you may know that Art Kaplan at University of Pennsylvania was quoted as saying, "If you can get close to 100% healthcare worker vaccination rates, you can cut patient deaths from influenza by 40%. The science is clear. So what about the ethics? Ask any healthcare worker why they chose to enter the profession, you're likely to hear, "Because I wanted to help people." Healthcare affirms the duty of healthcare workers to care for those in need, as articulated here in the Hippocratic writings. "May I always act so as to preserve the finest traditions of my calling, and may I long to experience the joy of healing those who seek my help." Biomedical ethics translates this into the following. Healthcare workers want to do good by their patients, beneficence. Healthcare workers want to protect their patients from harm, non-maleficence. Healthcare workers want to respect their patients as individuals, autonomy. Healthcare workers want to deliver equitable care, justice. Mandates protect healthcare workers against influenza, prevent viral spread to patients, and ensure a viable workforce. This helps healthcare workers carry out their duties and provide the kind of care that they want to give. In contrast to the individualist approach of biomedical ethics, public health ethics, as we all know, employs a population-based perspective aimed at improving and protecting the health of the entire public. Mandates keep the public safe from influenza by utilizing vaccines, mechanisms with proven efficacy, and ensuring that the burden of inoculation is spread evenly throughout the workforce. In this way, all healthcare workers are responsible for patient safety. The state is also concerned with promoting good public health and is legitimately concerned with protecting the public against the dangers of influenza. Again, vaccines are the way to accomplish this goal. The legal framework supporting mandates is called rational basis review. Rational basis review is a low-level test for constitutionality, asserting that a state's action must be reasonable and related to achieving a legitimate end. The legitimate end must be related to the state's original action. In this case, mandates lead to increased vaccination rates. Higher rates of vaccination result in reduced viral spread and fewer instances of influenza-related morbidity and mortality, essentially achieving the state's goal. So let's address a few of the objections waged against mandates. The first objection, public confusion, or that mandates will expose low healthcare worker vaccination rates and essentially cause public confusion. Instead, we argue that the problem of low healthcare worker vaccination rates will not be solved by simply keeping things quiet. Instead, we argue that by fixing our faults, we engender public trust. The second objection, personal choice. Or, healthcare workers should not be forced to be vaccinated. They should have the choice just like everyone else. In this, we argue that healthcare workers do in fact choose. They choose their profession. And in doing so, must be willing to accept what is required for their work in interest of public health and safety. Lastly, organizational opposition. Or, as the argument goes, healthcare organizations are hesitant to mandate because they are afraid that healthcare workers will essentially not comply. To the contrary, organization-implemented mandates in existence report few exemptions and only rare instances of noncompliance. We believe that the New York State case will eventually resolve this objection. So let's take a look at a mandate in action. BJC Healthcare in St. Louis, Missouri encompasses 13 hospitals and multiple community clinics, employing just short of about 26,000 people. Their mandate was instituted in October of 2008, resulting in just a few exemptions, 422 to be exact, for medical or religious and or philosophical objections, and only 8 terminations total for failure to comply. BJC reported a successful 98.4% vaccination compliance rate. Their total program compliance rate was slightly less than 100%. And so here's what we recommend. We recommend that mandates be instituted at both state and healthcare organizational levels. Perhaps this sounds a bit redundant. But in this way, at the state level, this will reduce the burden on healthcare organizations and ensure consistent care. At the organizational level, organizations will be able to enforce or encourage compliance among their workers. This should be operationalized accordingly. Mandates should be framed as an issue of public safety, should be incorporated as a fitness for duty requirement, made free, accessible, and with educational materials to dispel the common myths associated with influenza vaccination. And healthcare organizations should develop a system for evaluating exemptions. In summary, healthcare workers must protect their patients by getting vaccinated. Healthcare organizations have a responsibility to the public by making influenza vaccination of healthcare workers a mandated policy. Mandates are constitutional because the state has an interest in reducing the spread of infection and protecting the public. Vaccination helps accomplish this goal. And lastly, good intentions are no longer enough. For the reasons we've stated, we must confront the threat of influenza with equally serious action. After all, don't our patients deserve it? And thank you to my contributors. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sorry, there was some technical problems.
Oh, that's good. Good. Well, let me ask you, your pronunciation of your first name, is that Holly or Haley? Holly. Okay, thanks very much.
You know what? I had a music teacher call me Holly, so you can call me that.
That's separate than that. Was yours just loaded, preloaded on? Oh, yours are just preloaded, so.
You just close up on the upper right X. There you go.
We'll see that.
You should be able to.